Good morning, and thanks for joining us today on Wednesday, May 8th. This is the morning show at 88.5 KRFY. And I'm Susie Prez, one of the co-hosts this morning.
And I'm Chris Bessler, your co-host over here on the second mic. How are you doing today, Susie?
I'm doing fine. How about you, Chris?
I'm really great. It's such a beautiful day out there.
I know.
And it's helped but be great.
Yeah. It's already 50 degrees.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, that's almost like summer, isn't it?
Yep.
And we have a great show today. We have actually two groups we're talking to. We're starting off talking about bicycle safety and the rules for the road for safe cycling in Sandpoint. With Ben Olson and Charles Mortensen. Ben and Charles, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And our second group will come in around 8:35. It's Jennifer Brandenburg, Ken Larson, and a student, Sophie Dignan, and they're from the North Idaho High School Aerospace Program. And they have a big open house coming up on Saturday.
Yeah, so we're kind of like wheels and wings today.
I like that. That's right.
But first, so how's our weather look?
Well, it's amazing, actually. It's just sunshine and a few fluffy white clouds visually on the board from the National Weather Service. Currently, it's 50 degrees. Today, we can expect sunny and a high of 71, low tonight, 42. And it just gets warmer and warmer and warmer all the way up to Sunday, a high of 81. No precipitation forecast. That's about all I have to say, right?
Yeah.
Warm, beautiful spring weather. Yeah. Gardens will go crazy right now.
Yeah. We love that kind of weather, don't we? Other things going on outside. Lake Pendere level is coming up as they're filling the lake up now at the Albany Falls Dam. It's up a half of a foot in the past 7 days. It's now at 2056.3 feet. It's on its way to 2062, so we have a ways to go yet. Sunrise this morning was at 5:17 a.m. It'll set tonight at 8:08 p.m. That means we've gained in the past week with our longer days, 22 minutes of daylight per day.
We're still gaining. That's good news.
Yeah, still gaining. Yeah, up until June 21st, actually. Out there on the rivers, the Moye River is up just only 40 CFS this past week. It's now 1,300 CFS. It's actually a nice level for whitewater boaters to get out on the lake for the river for the first time this year, because it's going to get a lot higher as the spring runoff comes down. The Priest River is at 2770 CFS, and it will be rising quite a bit too, I'm sure. And up in the heavens, the first quarter moon is Saturday. And if you look to the southeast, you'll see Mars rising right at nightfall. And Mars is going to be visible all this month. Basically, it's that red star that you see out there. It's not going to be like last year. Last summer, we had some really gorgeous, really bright Mars displays because Mars was closer to the Earth at that time.
Okay. That's always good to know. Chris, you always bring us what's going on in the heavens.
And what else is going on around town? Anything we should mention?
Well, I have the Sandpoint City Minute from City Administrator Jennifer Stapleton. Thank you, Jennifer, for sending this to us every week. The City Minute is: demolition on the second fire-damaged building at First and Bridge will continue through Friday. The underground utility project on Main downtown is expected to be completed before Lost in the 50s. Flower baskets arrive next Wednesday. That's your Sandpoint City Minute.
It's probably about only 30 seconds there, Susie.
I know. I read fast.
Other things going on around town. Of course, Sunday is Mother's Day. All children. If anybody's a child out there, they should know that. And we're all children, so everybody needs to know that. And there's a lot of other things going on around town. Cooney Elementary is having something called a pirate run. And it has to do with getting pies for your family. It's a jogging event or walking, running event. And that's a pretty cool thing happening Saturday. Of course, there's a lot of music going on around town. There's a stand-up comedy show at the 219. And if you want to get more details on things happening in town, go to our calendars at krfy.org, supplied by sandpointonline.com.
That's great. You know, I want to get to our first interview. It's all about cycling. We have lots of bicycle races coming up. One that just finished with Syringa Cyclery and I guess it was Pendere Peddlers. Mm-hmm. So Charles Mortensen, let's just hear about that because it just happened. It's in its first year. You had a really good turnout. Let's hear how it went.
It went really well. We lucked out with the weather. It was a beautiful day. It's kind of the start of this good weather we've been having all week. And we had 128 registered riders. A few of those weren't able to make it, so I think we had 114 riders out there on the road, actually. It was hosted at Matchwood. We had a nice big party afterwards with Beargrass playing live music, food and drink, and it was really well attended by spectators there, and we had a blast.
The race itself is a little different. It wasn't a road race in on concrete. It was on gravel?
Yeah. So it was a mix of asphalt and gravel and dirt. We had two routes, a short route, which we call the One Humper, which was 48 miles, and the hump refers to the main big climb on that route. And then the Two Humper was a 68-miler into grizzly country north of Selly Valley.
Grizzly country with a bike on a gravel road. That sounds interesting.
Yeah. So most
that
of the fast riders did
this in your riding course. Right there, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like it was a really big success, so I'm sure this is only year one. And
year
so next
one,
year you're probably already starting to plan.
Yeah, we're already scheming for next year.
So are these mixed gravel pavement rides, or are they kind of taking off around the country?
They really are. You know, it seems like I'm hearing from friends in California who used to do a lot of traditional road racing, and they say that it's kind of dying out in favor for these gravel rides. They're a little more versatile in terms of the type of rider that will do them. They're not necessarily always races. They're usually grand fondos, and they're a little more fun. You know, you're riding on dirt, on gravel, on pavement. It's not quite as cutthroat as just pure road racing is.
So. And so grand fondo really refers to you're riding against the clock, kind of for a personal best as much as anything else.
Yeah, sort of. It's not really a race, but, you know, sometimes they're timed, sometimes they're not. Ours was. We had professional chip timing, and we had a start-finish line right in the middle of Oak Street.
Right in front of Syringa Cyclery.
Yeah, right between the shop and Matchwood Brewing, which was pretty convenient for...
What kind of bikes do they ride? I mean, you have to have a kind of special bike to ride on those varied surfaces, right?
Yeah, so it's basically, I mean, the ideal bike is they call them gravel bikes, and they're essentially road bikes, kind of like a cyclocross bike is, with, you know, some tread on the tires. The geometry of the bike is a little bit different than, you know, a road racing bike. It's not it's a little more relaxed, a little more comfortable, a little more stable. Mm.
Sounds like fun. And it was a benefit for Pendere Pedalers. And what I've heard about Pendere Pedalers is you've been doing amazing work up on the trail, the bike trails. I mean, people are just telling me that. So
yeah, so the Pendere Pedalers is primarily focused on trail building and maintenance. We manage the maintenance of the Syringa trails, for example. We're in the process of building the Watershed Crest Trail in the watershed, the Sandpoint Watershed, in and around the watershed. Just a little plug here, on June 1st, we're going to be having an event up at the roundabout on Schweitzer Road, which is a trail building, maintenance, and trail riding event. We're going to have some bike demos up there, and we're going to have a barbecue, and we're hoping to get as many volunteers as we can to help build and maintain trail. In the lower basin is what we're going to be focusing on that day.
All righty.
Yeah.
So,
and we will have a story about that in the next week's reader, actually, about the peddlers.
And all the great work they're doing. And when you say barbecue, I bet some people are going to show up.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it is bike ride to school day and school into work day. And we're here because, you know, I saw the article Ben, that you wrote in the Reader about bike safety, and then you had a precursor the next week, or a edition next the next week. And the rules of the road, it's really, really, really important that we have a strong idea as car drivers and bike riders. We're all responsible, and we probably all have our pet peeves, and I'll say mine at the end, but where should we start on this, Chris?
Well, let's start with, I think we want to talk now mainly to people that aren't competitive riders and more recreational riders, and how do they navigate safely on our streets, especially coming up with the summer. Ben, I know you have a few thoughts on this.
I've been known to have some thoughts.
Remember, no cussing.
Yeah, that's why I talk so slow on the radio. So about every year, actually twice a year, I run this cycling safety kind of feature in the Reader, because I ride my bike to work most days, and I think once a week I have an incident of some sort, whether it's somebody almost hitting me or somebody, you know, showing me one of their fingers. And usually it's because of a misunderstanding of the rules. And I think it's important to put that out there that everybody, including bike riders, especially bike riders, need to understand what the rules are so that, you know, you can avoid these possible collisions, because car versus bike is no good, you know.
No contest, really.
Yeah, unless you've got a really big bike. But I think for me, you know, Susie was talking about pet peeves. I think one of the things for me that's important to recognize is the Idaho stop, quote unquote. Idaho, for all the guff we get, we actually were quite revolutionary in a bike law in 1982. We're the first state in the union to adopt it, and it's a very simple bike law. When bikes reach a stop sign, they basically treat that as a yield sign. When they reach a red light, they basically treat that as a stop sign. So in other words, if a bike reaches a stop sign, nobody's coming in the other way, they can actually roll right through it. It doesn't mean, you know, gun it, and it just means you treat that as a yield.
So you look both ways carefully, of course, yeah, for any oncoming traffic. And if there is an oncoming traffic, you can go ahead and roll through.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of automobile drivers don't understand that, because
they don't.
As somebody that rides my bike around town, sometimes you'll get people kind of holler at you. They think you're breaking the law by rolling through the stop sign.
And vice versa. Also, you have, kind of related, cars stopping to let cyclists through when they really shouldn't be, you know.
Right. Whether they have a stop sign or not, that's what
I
find.
Yeah. And that's one thing that I heard actually while I was doing deliveries. When this April 25th issue had this bike stuff, and doing deliveries that day, I heard from every one of the bike shops, man, you touched on my one pet peeve. You know, I feel like most bike riders, while it's always nice to have somebody let you through, it actually gums up the works a little bit, because let's say one guy stops for you and you're on fifth, and then you've got a turn lane and another lane, and sometimes they don't get the message, and so they won't stop. And then sometimes they will stop, but then the other guy gets impatient because you've been waiting for everybody else, and they go. And it's just, if a driver stops to let you go and they have the right of way, it's frustrating.
Yeah.
And it's dangerous, too.
And it's dangerous.
And it is dangerous, because the bicyclist doesn't know whether to start or to stay put.
Yes.
Kind of get afraid to venture out there. Although I will say, if they stop, I'm on a bicycle and there's no oncoming traffic from the other direction, I'll go ahead and go through rather than waving them on, because they're trying to do it out of courtesy.
Yeah.
But it would be better if the drivers understood that, follow the rules of the road as an automobile driver, and let the bicycle rider wait at the intersection until he does have clear lane of traffic.
Yeah. Oddly enough, this seems to be the biggest bone of contention with bicyclists in Sandpoint. I feel like it's so prevalent, and it keeps happening. And I feel like ongoing education, continuing education on this rule is important, because same thing at red lights, but you just kind of, instead of yielding, bicyclists will have to come to a complete stop. You reach a red light, you stop, nobody's coming, just roll right through it. You know, I've been yelled at for this so many times. Mm-hmm. And I just say, Idaho, stop, as I'm riding by, and hopefully they look it up.
We could have shirts on or signs that we hold up. I am a car. You think I'm a bike? I'm not. I'm a car. So treat me like a car or whatever.
Yeah. The only time a bike is considered a pedestrian is when you're pushing it. And that's, you know, if you're standing with both feet on the ground, but you're straddling it, you're still considered a car.
One of the things I do, because I don't like that situation, I don't want to, like, Chris, what you said, make them go ahead if I'm at an intersection and the car stops. I just go to the pedestrian crossing, get off my bike, both feet across the bar, and walk across. I just pretend I'm a pedestrian at that point. So I just eliminate that, especially the major ones,
sure.
Because I just don't want to get into it. It makes me nervous. But the one thing I do know is, nobody, if you're a car driver, you just want to be super cautious. Also, bicyclists, mind the rules. Cars, go slow and be aware.
But
look around.
But that being said, it's also important to maintain the speed of traffic. One thing that I find a little odd that happens sometimes is when I'm riding down the street, sometimes cars will be afraid to just, you know, go around the bike, and they'll actually lurk behind me like they're stalking me. And, you know, in my business, I am always on the lookout for stalkers. So I'm almost like, why is this guy following me so closely for blocks? And so I'll get over onto the curb, and finally they'll go around. I think a lot of people are just afraid to use the lane. And so when a bike row or a sharrow is what they're called, an advisory lane, if you're in one of those lanes, you know, that's your lane. Cars can go right around you, no problem. You've got plenty of room.
And I think there's a law regarding how much space a car is supposed to give a cyclist when they're going around them. So if you're on a highway, I think it's 3 feet, isn't it?
I think so, yeah. It's a shoulder, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, if you're on a narrow road, you've got oncoming traffic and you're behind a cyclist and you don't have enough room to get past that cyclist with the oncoming traffic, you should wait till that you have the space to go around that cyclist.
Yeah, safely pass them as if they were a regular vehicle.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk a little bit about sidewalks, because, you know, one of my gripes about bicyclists is the guys that are zooming down sidewalks. Really, technically, what's the protocol for a bicycle on a sidewalk?
You're not supposed to do it. It's some states and some cities do have laws that that protect bicyclists on sidewalks, but Idaho and Sandpoint in particular, you're always supposed to walk your bike on the sidewalk or keep it in the road. And I admit, I'm guilty of this every once in a while when I'm doing deliveries because I have to go storefront to storefront. So it happens sometimes when you have to ride on a sidewalk. Sometimes there are certain areas where you have to bypass an area and you have to go on the sidewalk. But and that, I think the most important part of this is to always go slow and to yield to any pedestrians, whether you're illegally riding on the sidewalk or whether you're in a street. It's always great to just make sure that you're aware of what's in front of you.
You know, one of the things in this town, there aren't really signs to that effect. And a lot of people, because of the bump outs, are riding on the sidewalks. When you're delivering newspapers at 7 or 8 in the morning, there aren't a ton of people out on those sidewalks. But in the middle of the day, I just get off my bike and walk it. Is that okay?
On the sidewalk, yeah, of course. You can walk your bike and you're a pedestrian. But, you know, speaking of the bump outs, it's Sandpoint was actually kind of, they were part of a study when they built those advisory lanes, or sharrows, as we call them. And, you know, you'll see certain streets, Oak Street, Ella, I think Main Street has some, where the bikes actually have their own kind of proprietary lane. And you see those arrows and you see the bicyclists, and that's actually like the best route. And it was developed because the city wanted to create a safety route for a 10-year-old to ride to school.
And to City Beach.
And City Beach, yeah, and to recreate. And so part of the problem is, you know, it's easier said than done, but don't ride down Cedar. You know, I find myself every time I'm riding down Cedar going, oh, I should have taken Main or I should have taken Oak. Because those bump outs, as great as they are for the sidewalk, sometimes they are a pain for bicyclists.
Yeah, because you actually have to move out into the lane of traffic at that point. You need to be aware if there's a vehicle behind you.
They sort of did a hybrid on Oak, you know, the section of Oak that was rebuilt last year.
Yeah, yeah.
They have the bump outs, but they also have a paved bike path on off the road. So the path on that block is off the road, and then at the bump outs it goes out onto the road.
And that's between 5th on Oak, between 5th and 6th.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of unusual. I ride my bike down there. I'm like, okay, which path am I on? Do I stay on the Sharrow, it's on the road, or do I get on the new bike path?
Right.
Yeah. It's like they built the Sharrow onto the sidewalk. Yeah. It's pretty cool, actually. Yeah.
I'll have to check that out. I'm going to start riding my bike down to the station, and I haven't because I would typically go right down Cedar Street, and it doesn't feel comfortable. So I'll just jog over to Oak and see how that goes. Mm. It might be more comfortable.
Yeah, and that's probably a good tip for bicyclists is look for the less traveled routes to use. Even if it adds a block, it's a lot less stress.
Yeah. More exercise.
Yeah, it's good for bicyclists. Good for life. Look for the less traveled route, man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about something else. I mean, occasionally you'll see bicyclists that are coming down the going down the wrong side of the road, on the left side, coming towards you. And that's out of a mistaken belief that goes way back to when we were young, that, you know, you should ride on that side of the road facing the traffic. But that's not actually the case.
No. Yeah. I think they must be having some the British-style delusions. I never understand this one. I get why pedestrians ride or walk against traffic. It's you can see what's coming to you, and it's very clear. But I never understand when I see bicyclists riding against traffic. And sometimes you'll see both sides of the roads taken up and then one of the sidewalk, and it's just like Mad Max free-for-all. And I don't want to be the angry old man shaking his fist saying, get on the right side of the road. But, you know, sometimes
sometimes you do.
Yeah. I do. And it's an odd moment in my life.
It really, I mean, it's to their benefit that they hear that and understand that's really an unsafe way to be traveling on a bicycle.
Yeah, it is. It messes up a lot of stuff. The driver gets confused. Mm-hmm. The person turning onto that road gets confused. You don't, because when you're riding with traffic, you'll make a full left turn or you'll make a correct right turn. But when you're on that other side, you kind of cut across. So you kind of influence the other lane of traffic. And
super dangerous.
Yeah.
Yeah. So don't ride against traffic on the left lane.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to The Morning Show here at 88.5 KRFY. We're talking about bike safety, both for bicyclists, bike riders, and car drivers. The rules of the road. We're here with Ben Olson from the Sandpoint Reader and Charles Mortensen from Syringa Cyclery. And it's very interesting. We're giving this little mini class here. We're talking about some of the specific things that are probably some of the most important things. And the Reader had an article in a few weeks ago about bike safety, rules of the road. There's been some things going around Facebook. I think Opie put a really nice rules of the road for safe cycling in Sandpoint. I really like this this one. But how else can we get the word out? Are there classes, workshops, going around to the schools? How else can we get the word out so more and more people will hear about these specifics?
Well, I don't know.
Yeah. I feel like communication is number one. I feel like you should never be afraid of telling somebody in a civil manner when they're doing something wrong and dangerous. I think that's the most important thing, is to actually communicate that what we've been doing, which we think is correct, is not actually correct.
So know the rules first and foremost yourself, and then you could do a did you know moment with someone if you had the opportunity.
I don't know if we could get all the information that needs to be out there, but some sort of traffic signage, you know, at intersections, that would involve the city or the police department, yeah. I guess. But
I know the city has a pedestrian committee that I know Rebecca Holland was on it for a little while, and they actually make a pamphlet that that outlines all these rules, and I think they're available around in the racks around town. I've seen them off and on.
I think it's downloadable from the website, City of Sandpoint, as well as they do have a map that shows the designated bike routes around town, which, again, if you can, if you're going anywhere around town and you get on one of those designated routes, you do have a safer travel because they have sheros and they have some bike lanes and so on that are indicated.
And one thing we didn't really touch on was communication between bikes and drivers. And a lot of people feel silly when they're making a right turn or whatever, doing the whole hand up thing. But it's important to, just like when you're on a boat, you always try to make sure that people know your intentions. And so if you're turning, throw your arm out there. You know, a straight arm out to the left means left turn. If it's up, or you, some people use the right arm, that means go right, and then stop as a your arm is bent at the elbow and you're pointing down. That's always important.
Just yeah, that's given the other guys the like you said, an indication that what you're going to do, and it's much safer for you if they observe, oh, this guy's intending to do a turn, and they give you a little more space.
I wonder if we could have some bike clinics in the spring with all the bike shops in town. This is a bicycling town, and especially you see it today with bike to school day, bike to work day. In the early spring, we could get together some, and KRFY, some bike clinics. People could bring their kids down, because it's really the parents that teach the younger kids, and just have some fun with it. Have it like a bike rodeo.
And actually, the police department, Sandpoint Police, have done similar sorts of things in the past. So get together with them. Susie, you sound like an organizer to me.
I think so. I think it's very, very important, because I know one thing. If you are a car driver, of a car, and by accident, because someone didn't know something, you hit someone, it would be devastating, and not necessarily your fault, but nonetheless, it would change your life. And so now I'm going to bring up my pet peeve. It's helmets. And Chris, you know this because I always talk about it. But I really think that, especially children, if it's you're an adult and you don't mind if you fall off your bike, you typically don't fall off. But if you don't mind falling off your bike, your head will hit the ground first. Typically, it's very heavy. But with children, it just really bugs me to see kids without helmets. It's just one of those things. And I think there's ways to get free helmets. If it's about cost, well, let's get a grant and buy 1,000 helmets and give them away at the street corners. But what do you guys think?
Yeah, I think helmets for children on bikes is always a great idea. I think also lights. I can't say how many times I've seen a bike, not seen a bike at night until the last minute. I think a bike is so important, just like the reflectors, or a light on a bike is so important, as well as reflectors. I wear a helmet when I mountain bike. I wear a helmet when I'm going somewhere a little hairy, but I don't wear a helmet around town. Mainly because I have a really thick head. No, I'm just kidding. but I think that wearing a helmet is very important. I think that if you have any fear at all of falling, or if you've had some close calls with cars, it's never a bad idea to wear a helmet. You know, safety first, always.
Susie, would you like to scold Ben now?
Well, I kind of understand. You're an adult. You can take responsibility for your... But you're probably a real safe driver, too. And
I can say that now, I'm out of my 20s.
I'd say the rule of thumb, really, is kids should always wear helmets, because kids do fall more. And until they get old enough to make that decision for themselves, I think it's wise for parents to err on the side of safety, then make sure their kids are as protected as they can be. And then when you get older, like Ben, and heck, he doesn't have much to lose.
Not really.
No, I don't know. In California, it's a state law that children will have to wear helmets. So, you know, let's just go with the smart state and do stuff like that.
Well, now, those could be fighting words.
Oh, no, I was joking. You guys were laughing.
I want to follow up on something you said, though, about lights, Ben.
Yeah.
And as somebody that travels, you know, I go up Baldy a lot since I live up that side of town. I pass bicyclists kind of at dusk that are wearing dark colored clothing. Not only do they not have a light, their clothing is dark. And I think bicyclists, if you want to stay safe, be aware that bright colored clothing is a lot easier for cars to spot you, along with the lights, along with being aware the time of day when you are bicycling. Mm-hmm. If you're bicycling right at sunset and you have the sun behind you dropping low, the oncoming cars, it's very difficult for them to see you, and mm-hmm. you better assume that you're invisible. That's actually a good rule of thumb on bicycles, period. But be aware as a cyclist that you have to help the car drivers see you.
Yeah. Yeah, and they make those shirts with reflective backs, too. I feel like if you have a long commute to work on your bike, it's always important to protect yourself a little bit above the low threshold. If you're just biking two or three blocks to work a few days a week or whatever, you know, obviously you don't have to deck yourself out in full regalia. But if you're going 10 miles, I know a mm-hmm. woman who bikes to work every day and she lives 10 miles out of town. And
yeah.
I think she's awesome, mm-hmm. but she protects herself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sounds good. It's time to wrap it up, guys. I just want to say to Seringo Cyclery, congratulations on your cycle tour.
Cycle tour.
It's Danish, is that right?
Yeah.
That's
for
a fun.
Bike ride.
A gravel ride. And congratulations on that success.
Thank you.
And thanks for coming in and telling us all about it. We'll just stay on this. I think KRFY and Seringo Cyclery should have a bike clinic next spring. Just put it in your thinking.
We'll work on that.
Okay. And we have more guests coming in after we hear a song. We have Jennifer Brandenburg, Sophie Dignan, and her mother Karen is out there, and Ken Larson from North Idaho High School Aerospace Program. So we'll be right back, but we're going to hear a song. It's Queen, Bicycle Race. Stay with us. We'll be right back. And that was Queen, Bicycle Race. And this is The Morning Show with Chris and Susie on this beautiful Wednesday, May 8th. And we're back in the studio live, and we have new guests in the studio. We've just said goodbye to Ben Olson and Charles Mortensen talking about bike safety. And now we have Ken Larson, Sophie Dignan, and Karen Dignan from the North Idaho High School Aerospace Program. Welcome, Ken.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And Sophie.
Thank you.
And Karen.
Thank you.
Karen is Sophie's mother. Sophie is one of the students. So first of all, we probably want to hear about the North Idaho High School Aerospace Program just a little bit. What is it? What is its mission?
We're in our sixth year, and the mission is to show students the possibility of careers in the aerospace and aviation industry. And we basically do three things. We have an academic class that is conducted at Sandpoint High School. Then we have flight training that's done through Pilot Training Northwest. And we have the ACES Workshop, which is a group of students who actually have built an airplane. And they right now are restoring some antique airplanes. So we're doing those three things, and we're finding students are then moving toward careers in aviation. Some of our first students now are actually airline pilots. We have two or three who are licensed FAA aircraft mechanics, and some who then are in academic schools like Central Washington University, Rocky Mountain College, who are studying aviation programs.
Ken, how many kids are in the program right now?
At any given time, there are about 40 students in, and they're all from Bonner County, and they are not all doing all of those three different things, but we have 15 in our ground school class right now at the high school. which is a career pathways class. There are about 14, I think, that work on Saturdays and in the ACES workshop, and another probably six who are taking flight lessons working toward a pilot license. Mm.
The ACES workshop is an interesting thing because, as you mentioned, they actually restored or put together an airplane in the last couple of years, didn't they?
The second year of the program, they built an all-metal Zenith Zodiac, which is a single-engine, low-wing airplane. And it flew, and it was a fantastic flight. I was lucky enough to do that. Then the group that Sophie is in now, they were restoring a 1945 plane. And Sophie could tell you better about the two antique airplanes they're working on now.
Well, a good entree, Sophie. You're the student here. Tell us about, let's start with, what's your interest? What drew you to the program?
I initially joined the program because of my parents. They had heard about it, and they thought it would be a good experience, so they sent me. And that's how I got in, and I have enjoyed it ever since.
And what is your interest? Is it in doing the work on the planes or in flying planes, or what's your area of interest?
Well, I really enjoy working on planes. Thus far, I've done a lot of fabric work, but my goal is to be a pilot.
So you're in the flight training program as well?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Well, tell us a little bit about the planes that you're restoring right now.
Okay, so since I've entered the program, we've done fabric planes, mostly from 1942 to 45, the World War II era. And right now we're working on a 1942 Taylor craft. We're building it from the frame all the way up, so we've taken it down to just the metal. And thus far I've been working on fabric, so we've been covering various pieces of the tail. We just finished that, and we are now starting on cleaning the frame so we can start painting it and then putting back in the wires and the control surfaces. And then once that's finished, I believe we will go on to cover the fuselage, the main body of the plane. And that is the current project that I've been helping with.
And when you say fabric, what kind of fabric is it? Is it a cloth, actual cloth?
Yeah, yeah. So it's fabric. I'm not sure what the material is, but we're using something called the Steward system. So what happens is you put the fabric on and it's kind of loose, right? And the fabric will shrink when you use an iron up to 10%. So that's how we get it to be tight and fitted. So we'll use glue and tape and an iron to fit the fabric to the frame of the airplane.
Wow, sounds like quite a process. And you must have some expert instructors to help you with this.
Yes, so we have three instructors, volunteers, who help us with this, and they mentor us and make sure that we're doing it correctly, so it's up to factory code.
Okay. Karen, the mom, Sophie mentioned that you kind of guided her towards this. Did you see some early interest in aviation?
I have family that are interested in flying or have been in the military and have flown. So there's a little history in our family, but mostly it was the project of kids working hands-on with airplanes. That just sounded like fun to me. I think we just heard it word of mouth from somebody who knew somebody who saw it in the paper, something like that. And it looked like fun. Since we've been in the program, I have five daughters, and they're very supportive of girls in the program, and there's a lot of opportunities for girls in flight, which I was unaware of. So I think that's a really neat thing, an opportunity I didn't know about, just for girls to pursue. So I've liked the opportunities. I really have really liked the safety of the project. I was a little stunned that they were flying planes that were made out of fabric. I didn't actually realize people did that anymore, but they're very conscious of the safety, and they're very careful to overlook that and make sure that's a priority. And that really gives me a lot of confidence in that. I love that the kids have so much time and hands-on with that. It's really the students who are building these planes up, and that's amazing.
So what's the parents' role? Is it like any other class, you can drop them off and they do their thing, or do the parents get more involved?
I haven't been more involved. My husband has been part of the EAA. He's joined the EAA, and they've started participating in that club just from coming to ACES and then joining the EAA and meeting more of the flight community in Sandpoint. They have regular meetings. They bring in really amazing speakers. There is an astronaut and I think a meteorologist that has come to speak to the club. So just getting to know a greater part of the community and realizing there's a lot of passionate people who fly in this area.
Mm-hmm. So you're talking about building a plane, Sophie, from the metal all the way up. And eventually, do these planes fly?
Yes. So one plane that we finished last summer is also 1942, and it just needed a repair. So that plane is flight worthy. Right now, we're just working on some of the engine, but that plane has flown.
And it must be quite an amazing feeling to work on a plane that was not flyable and then to go up in the sky in a plane. Have you been up? Are you a flight person?
I have flown a few times with Ken and other instructors. I have not flown in one of the planes we've built, but it is really cool to see like the work being used and having it like stay together. It's really cool to see that.
So how long did it take to put the plane that you're flying now together? That's a multi-year project, right?
So this one plane that we flew, her name is Patches, 1942, and we're calling it Patches because there's only part that needed to be repaired. So the fabric on the very top had been damaged by hail, and we just needed to repair that one part. So that was not a very long project, but it is flight-worthy now. Versus the one we're working on now, we've had to completely strip down all the previous fabric that was on it, clean it, and now we're building it from the ground up.
Quite a bit more. So this is more than a one-year project, I bet.
Yes, yeah. This one we're working on.
Yeah.
The first airplane they built took almost 3 years. It was given to us by a person in Sun Valley.
The frame and the motor, right?
We had to take all the little pieces apart, and it's an all-metal airplane. So they learned all about riveting and drilling and engine work, and the students actually built the engine. And if people are interested in seeing this work, this Saturday, the 11th of May, we're having an open house. And the focus of the open house is to show off the incredible achievements of these students and the work they've done. And all of these airplane efforts, all of the work they do has to be inspected, and it has to meet FAA requirements. And so they learn the skills, but they also learn to follow instructions exactly. They learn teamwork, and they also just learn a lot about the industry itself. There's probably never been a better time to get into the aviation industry because there's a huge shortage of pilots and mechanics and engineers.
So the open house Saturday, it's at the airport?
The students have a rented hangar where they're doing work, and then we have another hangar where we do the flight training. And they're both at the Sandpoint Airport, and they will be the focus of the open house. For pilots and the members of the Experimental Aircraft Association, which is the EAA Karen mentioned, they will be meeting with a meet and greet with the students from 9 to 11. And then from 11 to 2, it's open to the public, and we invite anyone to come. And at noon, we're having free hot dogs. And at 1 o'clock, we'll have a demonstration of drones. For the first time this year, we have added building and flying drones to the program. And thanks to a grant from the Community Assistance League, CAL, and also the Idaho Community Foundation, our school class at Sandpoint High School has built some amazing professional drones that we hope on this Friday they'll fly for the first time, but you'll be able to see those on Saturday as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, that raises a good question. How is the program supported? I assume this has taken more funding than a typical class.
It's very expensive because we're buying airplane parts. Yeah. It's funded through donations, and we've received a few grants, one from Cal, one from Idaho Community Foundation, and then one from the Whittier Foundation, which is called the Confidence Grant. And those three grants plus A lot of small donations, $50, $100, $200 from the community keep us going. And then all of the money goes to the projects because there are no paid administrators. Everybody is a volunteer.
Mm-hmm. So if somebody's listening and they want to donate, how would they do that? Sophie, you tell us. How would somebody donate, you know?
Well, I know the EAA, the Experimental Aviation Association, a lot of their funds help this program. So one way you could donate money is going to the EAA chapter in Sandpoint and donating money specifically for ACES. You could also contact Ken, and he, I believe, is in charge of the ACES program. He started it, so I'm sure he would be able to take that money and put it aside for the ACES program. And those are the two ways that I know of.
And you have a website?
Yeah, and we have a website, highschoolaerospace.org, and there's a donate button on there.
Okay. And also come to the open house on Saturday. What time does that start, Sophie?
It starts at 9 a.m.
Okay.
At the airport, I imagine there'll be signs if people just go to the regular airport parking lot there off of Boyer.
Yeah, the address is 1101 Airport Way. If you go to Boyer near the Idaho Extension field over there, there's a green sign that says airport. Go to the end of that street. There's a big brown building. Inside that building, people can direct you to the hangars. And we'll have some signs out on the ramp that point which way to go.
Yeah, and if folks aren't familiar with the airport, it's a good chance to just see what our airport's about, because it is an important part of the community in terms of providing for transportation and commerce.
It's a very significant part of the community. And it's also a time to meet the really great community of people at the airport.
I was wondering, and you may have said, when did this program start? How long has it been going on? Anyone know?
6 years.
Okay, so have some of the students graduated from high school and gone on to an aerospace position, job, schooling?
Several of the students have. Our very first high school student was Maggie Kircher, and she's now an airline pilot with Republic Airlines. Another of our students, Sam Stocking, has a class date at Republic Airlines, and he just finished a four-year program. Four of the students have gone into engineering at the University of Idaho. Another four have become licensed aircraft mechanics. And so we're seeing a growing list of success stories of various students.
And speaking of a success story, Sophie, you've been selected as an exchange student for a pretty innovative program. Tell us a little bit about that.
So it was kind of a rush because I am a homeschooler. I didn't know if I would even be able to apply and be accepted for exchange. So I asked if that was even possible as a homeschooler, and they said, yes, sign up, and I was accepted. So I'm going to Taiwan this summer for a year of exchange, and I'm very excited to go, but I'm also very sad because I'm leaving behind many things, including the ACES program, but I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, that'll be quite an experience. Yeah, you might leave a few things behind, but you're going to really find a lot of enriching experiences, I'm sure. So,
is the exchange program focused on aviation?
No, this is an exchange program through the Rotary. It's just something I was interested in, and it's not directly connected to ACES. Mm-hmm.
But I have to think that you're putting yourself out there in this type of ACES program was a good mark on the resume for you when you applied for the program, for the exchange program.
Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's what, kids that are ambitious like that and they get out there and get a great start, that's keep it going, Sophie.
Mother Karen, how do you feel about Sophie being gone for a year?
Well, I'm thrilled that she gets to go. It will be hard that she's far away and we have a big family. She's going to leave a big hole behind. But I think the experience is going to be wonderful. I love the Rotary's program of creating peace in the world one student at a time. I think that's a fabulous mission, and I'm really, really thrilled that she gets to be part of it. That's really special.
All righty. What do you say, Chris?
Well,
One more time.
Tell us about the event Saturday so people make sure they get that. It's at the airport.
Saturday from 9 to 11 is a meet and greet with the pilots and students around our community. And then 11 to 2 o'clock is open to the public. And it's a great time for parents and students to come and just see what the program's all about, because maybe they'll want to join. And it's also a time for the community to come see what the achievements are and the incredible history of what these students are working on, as well as just to see the airport itself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, well, Ken Larson, Sophie Dignan, and Karen Dignan, thank you for coming in and telling us today about the North Idaho High School Aerospace Program. Maybe we'll be able to venture over and check it out on Saturday. It is pretty cool. I went to an open house you had a few years ago. Actually, I think you didn't quite have your first aircraft flying, but you were close.
A very exciting program. It's so nice to hear about it. I had no idea. So thank you, all of you, for coming in and sharing it with us and our listeners here at 88.5 KRFY on the morning show. And just so everyone knows, if you didn't get to hear the whole interview, you can go to our website after 10 o'clock, and we will have it as a podcast on our website. That's krfy.org. So thank you very much for coming in. And best of luck, Sophie, in Taiwan. When do you leave, by the way?
This summer. I don't have the exact dates yet.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We'll be thinking about you, over there. Mm-hmm. And we have a few announcements. We have about 3 minutes, Chris, to do a few local announcements. I will announce that tomorrow on the morning show, Jim Healy and Carrie Logan will be in for the morning show tomorrow, Thursday. That's May 9th. Their guest will be Karen Wiedelmeyer, director of the Music Conservatory of Sandpoint. Airtime is 8 a.m. on 88.5 KRFY. This is your community radio station. And coming up June 7th and 8th, KRFY will be having its annual membership drive talking about fundraising. This is something we do every year because it's our listener-supported community radio station, and it's commercial-free, so it means that, listeners, we need your support. You can even make a donation today by going to our website at krfy.org. There's a secure PayPal button right there on our website, too. And what else, Chris?
Well, of course, there's a lot of things going on around town. If you're out driving today, please keep your eyes open. There's a lot of kids on bicycles out there because it's bike to school day. And on my way in today, I noticed there was an awful lot of young bicyclists. So watch out for them. Speaking of bicycling, the Chafe 150, the bike ride that comes up in the middle of June, they have an event Friday. It's the Chafe 150 Happy Hour. It's at Matchwood. There's music. There's prizes. Of course, there's a fundraiser for the Chafe Ride, which is put on by the Sandpoint Rotary as well. And the money raised in the ride this year is going to early childhood literacy, instilling the love of reading in young kids. It's so important. And as you know, the saying, first kids, they learn to read, and then after that, they read to learn. So it's a foundational skill that kids need to really grasp in order to succeed throughout their entire adult career. Anything else, Susie?
That's pretty much it. Next week for us on the morning show, we will have Allie Empsch, Bonner General Health Stroke Coordinator, and a second interview with Robin Hansen and Sandra Bauer from the Westside School District talking about the upcoming May 21st levy vote. There is an election May 21st for the taxing districts.
That's for the west side of the county.
Right, mm-hmm. Over there in Priest River area. So that's what's coming up for us on the morning show. We're going to go out with a song, and this is in honor of Bloomsday that just happened last Sunday. Anyone in this room run it? Nope. Okay. But it was very exciting. Over 45,000 people ran, and this is Vangelis, Chariots of Fire, an iconic road running song. We hope you have a beautiful day.
Yeah, bye now.
Hey, thank you.